Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
My name is Mark. I'm an actor, but you've probably never seen anything that I've been in. Even though I constantly went out for auditions, I really didn't have a lot of steady work. My wife Gretchen had a good job at a bank, and I worked part-time at a coffee shop to earn as much as I could when I wasn't chasing my dreams. I also helped out around the house a lot, mostly so that Gretchen wouldn't feel so resentful for being the breadwinner. One day, Gretchen suggested that I start taking on some side gigs to supplement our income. I didn't know how to do that, so she suggested that I go online to see if anyone nearby needed help. I was pretty good at construction and renovation stuff, so I went to Craigslist to see if there was anything that would fit me. Right away, I found a post from a guy named Jonathan. His address was really close to ours, and he needed help fixing the door on his dishwasher. I had the tools for it, and it seemed like an easy gig, so I emailed him. We sent a couple of messages back and forth, and I agreed to go over to his place that afternoon. When I got there, Jonathan seemed really nice. He took me inside and showed me his kitchen. His house was so much nicer than ours. I could tell he made a lot of money. Everything was expensive and clean, except for his dishwasher. It was an old model, and its door had fallen completely off. As I checked out the damage, he poured me a glass of lemonade. I asked him what had caused the damage, and he said, "Oh, it's just old, I guess." Then he handed me the lemonade. I could tell he was lying. There were scratches along the edge of the door, and the screws had been yanked out. Whoever had broken this dishwasher had done it on purpose. It looked like someone had whacked a wrench against the side of it until the whole door fell off. I instantly got suspicious. I looked down at the lemonade in my hand and knew that I shouldn't drink it. This guy was up to something, and I didn't trust anything that he gave me to drink. I pretended to take a long sip, but I kept my lips shut. Then I asked if he could get me a towel before I got started. While he grabbed one, I quietly poured the rest of the lemonade down the sink. When he came back with the towel, I pretended that I'd just finished drinking the whole thing. He smiled and told me to take my time. Then he left the room. Despite my fear, I wasn't 100% sure that Jonathan had tried to poison me. Maybe it was all in my head. So with him out of the room, I turned toward the dishwasher. I would finish the job and get out of there as soon as possible. It took me less than 10 minutes to get the door back on its frame. The dishwasher still had obvious scratches along its side, but otherwise it was fixed. I stood up to leave, but when I turned around, Jonathan was already standing right behind me. "Done already?" I nodded. "Are you okay?" he asked. "You look a little woozy." The way he said it told me everything I needed to know. He expected me to be woozy. He had tried to If I was going to leave safely, I needed to play along. "A little," I said, forcing myself to stumble a bit. "Maybe you should sit down for a bit while I get your money." He grabbed my shoulders and guided me toward the living room. I saw a long rope laying on the table. I hadn't noticed that before. Clearly, he was planning to tie me up. "Actually," I said, "just Venmo me. I need to get home." He tried to tell me to wait. He said I wasn't in a good state to drive. He still thought that his stuff was coursing through my system. I didn't stop, though. I hurried toward the door and flung it open. I could have raced out of there, but there was someone standing in my way. Gretchen. She was out on the porch, waiting to knock. Without saying anything, she walked inside, forcing me to step back. "What's going on?" I sputtered. She gently placed her hand on my chest, and then she violently shoved me backwards. I fell onto the couch. Then she turned toward Jonathan and asked if I drank everything. "Yup," Jonathan answered. "It's amazing he's still able to stand." They both turned toward me. "No offense, buddy," Jonathan told me, "but Gretchen needs a real man in her life. It'll all be over soon." I was too shocked to say anything. This was all their plan to get rid of me? Gretchen and her lover had created the Craigslist ad, convinced me to come here, and then, what? What were they going to do? Gretchen pulled a knife out of her purse. She looked right at me, but her expression was cold. I'm sorry, but I have to do this. She stepped closer, holding the knife in front of her. Jonathan grabbed my arm, ready to start tying me up. I kicked him as hard as I could. He stumbled backward, colliding with Gretchen. They both fell onto the table. As I ran out the door, I heard Jonathan scream in pain. Gretchen had accidentally stabbed him with the knife. I raced into my car and drove away. When I got to a busy street, I parked my car and called the police. I told them everything, and they said to come into the station to give a statement. They warned me not to go back to Jonathan's house. Within the hour, the police had visited his house and found evidence to corroborate my story. They tested the empty glass and found traces of sleeping medicine. They also found the ropes and the bloody knife. Unfortunately, they didn't find Jonathan or my wife. I'm still waiting for the police to call. It's been 3 weeks and I haven't heard anything. They're still on the run.
My name is Evan. Last year, I got a new teaching job over in Asheville, North Carolina. I had never been there before, but the job was perfect, and I couldn't say no. I instantly accepted the offer. I had to find an apartment within my price range, but I was shocked at how expensive Asheville was. Rent was more than double what I was able to afford. I looked all over, but I couldn't find anything reasonable. While I was staying in a pretty gross hotel in Asheville, someone suggested that I look for places on Craigslist. I'd never used Craigslist before, and I always thought that it was a bit sketchy, but I was desperate. So I went to the rental listings, and I found a guy named Andy who wanted to rent out a room in his condo. I didn't like the idea of sharing a bathroom and kitchen with someone I'd never met, but the address was literally down the street from my new job. I emailed him to tell him that I was interested. We exchanged some messages and eventually agreed to a Zoom meeting so we could see if we were compatible. When I saw his face on my computer screen, I was instantly relieved. He seemed like such a nice, honest guy. He answered all my questions and he gave me a really good first impression. During our meeting, he was sitting at his table with the kitchen counter just behind him. I couldn't see a lot of the house, but what I did see looked nice. I asked if he could move his laptop around and give me a virtual tour of the place. But he said that he wanted to clean up a little first. He'd show me later. This meeting was just to figure out if we were personally compatible. That should have been a red flag for me, but I trusted him. I was about to end the call when I noticed something moving on the floor behind him. It was a little black lump. I leaned closer to my computer to get a better look. Andy noticed my expression because he spun around in his chair. Instantly, he jumped up and ran into the kitchen. By then, I could see more of the black lump. It looked like someone's head covered in a garbage bag. It was some poor guy wrapped in a bag, and he wasn't dead. I couldn't see most of him because the kitchen counter was in the way, but I could still see him writhing on the floor. Andy ran toward him and kicked his head until the body was once again hidden behind the counter. He stood there for a second, looking down. I think he was waiting for the body to stop moving. Then he casually walked back to his computer screen. I was so focused on what I had just seen that I completely forgot I was still on Zoom. He could still see me. He looked right into my eyes, his face weirdly blank. So you saw that, huh? He sounded like I just caught him jaywalking or something. I didn't move. Yeah, I figured. Then he ended the Zoom call. I don't know how long I sat there completely frozen. What had just happened? One second I was having a friendly chat with this nice, normal guy, and the next I was watching a murder. It didn't feel real. Slowly, realization set in. I was in danger. I was a witness, and Andy would come for me. I couldn't imagine what he was capable of. I had to figure out if he could track me down. Thankfully, Craigslist uses temporary email accounts to protect its clients, so Andy didn't have my email. We'd never exchanged phone numbers or shared our last name, so he didn't have those either. All he had was my Zoom address. Was that enough to find me? Maybe, but it would take him a while. Even if he had all my contact information, he didn't know my motel room. I'd be safe for now. All I had to do was call the police and tell them everything. I reached for my phone and dialed 911. I told the dispatcher everything. It took a while because I wanted to include every detail while it was fresh in my brain. I knew that they'd record those calls for later. Then I told her I was driving straight to the station and hung up. I went to the bathroom and splashed water on my face. I think I was still in shock, at least a little bit. That seemed to help. Then I grabbed my keys and left. When I opened the hotel door, Andy was waiting on the other side. In the time it took me to talk to the police, he had driven across the street and found me. I felt so stupid for not going to the police station immediately. He shoved me backwards and walked inside. Before I could stop him, he slammed the door shut behind him. It's not personal. I just can't have witnesses. He popped open the pocket knife in his hand. Now, I knew I should have been terrified, but thank God I was still in shock. I stood there facing him. If you're a murderer, why would you even want a new roommate? His eyes widened in anger. I'm not a murderer, he screamed in my face. I just killed one person, my jackass uncle, that's it. I was going to bury him and be done with it, and then you stuck your nose in my business. He jabbed the knife into my stomach. I felt the force, but I didn't feel the pain. Not yet. Andy looked at me, confused at my non-reaction. I guess I didn't even flinch. In his moment of confusion, I grabbed him by the side of the head and bashed his face against the wall. I'd never fought anyone in my life. I'd never even seen a boxing match. I didn't like violence at all. But in that moment, I was acting like some action star. I let go of his head and he slumped onto the ground, his face leaving a long streak of blood on the wallpaper. I wasn't sure if he was dead, but he probably was. Then I slowly sat back on the hotel bed. Andy's knife was still sticking out of my stomach. I was finally starting to feel the pain. It was excruciating. I grabbed my phone and called 911 again. Hey, I think I need an ambulance.
I had figured that the grass that looks green isn't so green when you're on the turf. You start to notice the parts of it that the pests had eaten into, the parts of it that had browned and decayed, turned to mush that other greenery can grow off of. It was the same for me with America. For many years, America was the country of my dreams. Life in my home country had become tiring, and in many ways, I felt as though I had outgrown the things that I did there. Moving to the U.S. was not a hard decision. I had the means in my home country to move, and my brother had settled into a local community where I could join him. He had lived in the U.S. long enough to join the local police department, so I assumed I would have no problems with the law. The America I had in my mind and the America I arrived at left me jarred. I was always a worker in my home country. Ever since I got my degree, I had scaled up the corporate ladder a decent amount. So I was puzzled when I found out I could not work in America with all of the knowledge and expertise I had. I lived for 2 weeks in my brother's house, and even though he never complained, it started to feel like torture watching the days roll by with nothing to do. He told me to be patient, and I was. For an extra week, I bid my time, and by the time my first month was going by without any means of employment, I knew I had to do something. I went on the internet, and my search led me to Craigslist. In my home country, I had never had to actively search for job positions. I had a good network of friends and family that could vouch for my tenacity and hard work. But here, I had to search. It was a challenging ordeal, but I knew to see it through. I saw jobs around my area in plumbing and other handiwork. But I did not know how to do those things because I simply was unequipped for anything that did not require a high-level set of specific skills. The closest I saw to what I could consider a job was a professor's ad for a research assistant. When my brother returned from his shift, I told him about the job I had found. I noticed a small amount of hesitation pass before he replied to me with a bob of his head. He asked me about the job and I gave him the details of it that I had gotten from the professor himself during a call earlier in the day. He asked for the address and asked me to take one of his corporate shirts, as it would help with the perception my employer would get of me. The next day, I was ready for my job interview before the crack of dawn. I traveled as I had been directed through the city to the address I was given. When I arrived at the address, I was taken aback by what appeared to be a house in a very quiet street. So quiet that the buzz of flies shook the tranquility. The house in particular was a modest bungalow with a few steps that one could climb up into the porch. The lawn in front of the house was overgrown and the shrubs had tangled into weeds. I got an awry feeling from this shifty-looking abode, but I needed the job. I approached the building quietly and climbed up the rickety stairs. One of the steps almost crashed under the pressure of my weight, and I noticed it. I knocked on the door once, and it yawned open. I was careful to not poke my head inside because I did not know what to expect. My stomach was a knotted mess that hurt from all the anxiety I was processing. "Hello, Professor Emil?" I called into the house, and a deep voice bellowed back with an answer.
"Enter, Daniel. I've been expecting you,"
the answer was, and I stepped in. The smell of a strange incense being burned in the room wafted into my nostrils, and I struggled to contain it in the face of my new employer. When he saw that I was in the house, he turned around in his chair from facing the table to facing me.
"Just as I expected from that voice, a foreigner,"
he said, as though he expected only foreigners to apply to his ad on Craigslist that required a research assistant of all jobs.
"Could you come with me to fetch some of the documents from the basement? We will have to go through them together."
I was taken aback immediately by this request because even though I felt myself drifting towards fulfilling this task, I didn't expect that I would get the job so easily as I had only come for a physical interview. I did not mention my observation as I walked with Professor Emil down a stairway into the basement, which was lit by a clumsy-looking lamp. My instinct went off about the basement not being exactly right, but I was not American, so I could not tell why homes were designed like horror passages. I observed the smell from the living room had changed and something more pungent had begun to replace the odor in my nostrils. But I didn't think too much about it. Professor Emil pushed the door open, and I followed him into a dim-lit room. He walked to the corner as though to turn on the light in the basement. I stood facing him, not expecting that he would swing a heavy baseball bat at my face, knocking me over with a wild swing.
"Bastard," I heard him cuss in vicious aggression. "I'm gonna enjoy devouring your flesh. It's been months of waiting for a taste of one of you."
I could not understand how I had walked into the hands of a deranged cannibal who stalked people online with false ads of a job offering. Blood oozed out of my face as I lay on the floor in utter petrification. But even in my dizziness, I understood my situation and the nightmare that it was. I had not wished for death. My life in my home country had been good. I wanted better. I had applied because I wanted a job, and now the hands of death were closing around my neck like a vicious grip. I tried to protest my horror, but I found myself too stunned to speak from the floor. I was conscious. It was all I knew. Even my limbs would not move. I thought about my mother, and my face was hot with tears. I thought about my brother, too, as I started to drift into oblivion. Professor Emil walked to me with the bat in his hand and took one more swing on my knee. I heard my bone crack, and what followed was a loud bang of a gunshot. I thought I had been shot, but it was Professor Emil. "Daniel, are you okay?" My brother swooped in, and I passed out from the tumultuous emotions that were coursing through me. I would later awake in the hospital and be told that Professor Emil had died from a shot to the head, and my life had been spared by my brother's quick thinking to trail me with a tracker he put in the cloth he offered me. Professor Emil's house was littered with victims of the deadly traps he set online.
Last February, I visited my parents in Arizona. I hadn't seen them over the holidays, so I felt kind of obligated to fly down there. I didn't realize I'd be gone for Valentine's Day until after I'd requested my time off and bought my flights. By then, it was too late to change. My boyfriend Max was mad at me for leaving him, but I said I'd make it up to him when I got back. Besides, Valentine's Day was never a big deal for us. Last year, he'd gotten me a cheap box of chocolates that was clearly from the dollar store. So I flew into Phoenix and drove my rented car a couple hours to Flagstaff, where my parents lived. They were happy to see me and loaded me up with all sorts of Christmas presents that they'd gotten me last year. It was really sweet, even though I told them I didn't want anything. I just wanted to see them. They got me some really expensive stuff, too. My mom even got me this gold necklace that was probably at least $100. After I opened everything, I felt like a real jerk for not getting them anything in return. Honestly, I didn't even think about it. I'd already sent them a card, and I was still helping them with their car payments every month. But I knew I had to buy them something. My mom could tell I was feeling self-conscious, so she reassured me that they weren't expecting any presents from me. She also added that Target was just a few minutes away, and they always had a great selection of stuff. Obviously, she wanted me to get her something from Target. My mom can be pretty unsubtle sometimes. I was surprised that she suggested Target, of all places. I didn't think she liked shopping there, but I went anyway. Of course, they didn't have any Christmas stuff anymore. Everything was Valentine's related. Lots of pink teddy bears and stuff. I looked around the sales area at the front of the store until an older woman approached me from behind. She smiled and asked if I needed help with anything. I told her no, and then her smile disappeared, and she asked, "Do you know that man?" I turned around to see who she was looking at. I saw my ex-boyfriend Ronnie standing behind a display of shirts. He wasn't moving, just staring at me. My blood ran cold. Ronnie was a terrible boyfriend. He screamed at me all the time, and he erupted with anger whenever he saw me talking to another man. Things got so bad between us that one night, I just packed up and left without saying goodbye. Ronnie was the reason I left this town in the first place. I was worried that I'd see him again when I come back, but I didn't expect to see him just staring at me across a huge store. "Would you like me to call security?" the woman asked. I told her not to worry. I knew that he was probably just shocked to see me. We'd broken up so long ago. He was probably just going to leave me alone. But he didn't. He started following me throughout the store. I went to the shoe section, then the electronics, then the books. But wherever I went, he kept pace. He made sure not to get too close, but I guess he didn't want the workers to get suspicious of him. But also, he wasn't even trying to hide. I was starting to get scared, really scared. I made it to the exit and passed the same old woman. I ran outside and tried to get to my car. Ronnie kept coming. Now that we were in the parking lot, he broke out onto a full-on sprint. He caught up to me within seconds and grabbed my shoulder. "Please, babe," he said. "I just want to talk." I tried to push him off of me, but he spun me around so that we were face to face. He held my wrist in one hand and used the other to reach into his back pocket. I thought he was going to pull out a knife or something, but instead, he took out a pink teddy bear. He was trying to impress me with a stuffed animal he obviously had stolen from the store. He pushed the bear towards me, but I refused to take it. The stupid thing dropped onto the parking lot. "Babe," Ronnie said, "it wasn't supposed to be like this. I'm a different person now. But you just stole something, and you chased me through the store." "I didn't chase you," he said. "And I bought that bear for you before I got here. You gotta trust me. I even had the receipt." I shook my arm out of his grip and backed away. If that was true, how did he know that he would find me at Target? How did he know that I was even in town? Then I realized that my parents must have told him. Why else would they make me go to this specific store at this specific time? They knew the horror stories about Ronnie, but they still wanted to push us back together? What kind of parents did I have? I'm never going to take you back, Ronnie, I said. I'm in love with someone else now. His eyes flashed pure hate. I guess he never completely forgiven me for leaving him. He pushed me against the side of the car, hard enough to set off its alarm. I didn't know what he was gonna do to me, but it didn't look good. I was terrified. Then, a shopping cart rammed into his side and sent him toppling onto the asphalt. I looked over and saw who had pushed the carts at him. The old woman. She waved at me from across the lot and said that she had already called the police. I drove home and told my parents that I knew exactly what they had done. I didn't mention that things had escalated as much as they did. I didn't even say that the police had gotten involved. They tried to pretend that they had no idea what I was talking about. I could tell they were lying. That just made me even angrier. I packed up my bags and left right away. It was time to get back to Max. After all, he was my real family now, and we really should be together for Valentine's Day.